Well, let's go ghost hunting. In a moment, Stephen Williams joins us from the Memphis Ghost Investigations and Spirit Rescue Team. Guess what we're talking about next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Stephen Williams, a former member of the Ghost Stalkers of West Tennessee and the Memphis Mid-South Ghost Hunters. Currently, he directs the Memphis Ghost Investigations and Spirit Rescue Team, which he founded back a couple of years ago. His past investigations include hundreds of residents, businesses, public sites in the Mid-South. His notable national investigations include the Crescent Hotel in Eureka Springs, Arkansas, the Myrtles Plantation in St. Francisville, Louisiana, the Thomas House in Red Boiling Springs, Tennessee, the St. Augustine Lighthouse in St. Augustine, Florida, and the Union Screaming House in Union, Missouri, which has been featured on popular paranormal investigation television programs such as Ghost Hunters, Ghost Adventures, and Paranormal State. Stephen, welcome to the show. Looking forward to this.
Hey, George. Thank you for having me.
How did you get involved in ghost investigations?
I started about 18 years ago, and it just came out of a little ghost tour that I went on down in St. Augustine, Florida.
And once you did it, you were hooked, weren't you?
Well, I took a couple of photos, and the tour guide said, watch for these orbs, so-called orbs, in your photos. And I did get something that looked like that. And so I came back to Memphis after that vacation and found a little group here, those Ghost Stalkers of West Tennessee ladies, sent the photos to them, and they debunked them.
They debunked them?
They did.
Did that bother you?
It did not. I went out in the backyard. They told me to go out into my backyard at night and to find where a spider had spun a thread from a tree down to the ground and to take a flash picture. And sure enough, that looked like a streaking orb.
Ah, that's pretty interesting. And so then when you formed the Memphis Ghost Investigations and Spirit Rescue Team back in 2018, what was your impetus to put that together?
I had been investigating up to that point for about 16 years, and I'd take a little break, actually, to take care of my elderly parents.
Good for you.
And what was the catalyst to form a new group was I went to a public mediumship demonstration, and one of the ladies that was there doing a reading in front of everyone picked up on a little spirit girl that is seen around me. She was actually a rescue that I was involved in St. Augustine, Florida, back in 2007. And so she's kind of like my test for genuine mediums. If they see her around me, I know that they're the real deal. So she described this little girl, and I just felt like it was time to put a team together with some very intuitive, gifted mediums, and that's how we got started.
How many people did you put together in your team?
There's just three of us, and really you don't need more than three, in my experience. That's plenty.
And do you have to, how do you qualify them?
These two ladies, the first one, of course, saw the little girl, whose name is Alice, so I knew that she had those clairvoyant and clairaudient abilities. And then I was doing a spirit rescue circle, which I teach those, about 6 months later. And I kept noticing there was a young lady across the room from me that was looking to my right side. And so after that was over, I went and spoke with her, and she described my great-grandmother. So I knew that she was clairvoyant and clairaudient. So they were just perfect, kind of a perfect fit for what I wanted to do.
Lots of ghost investigators out there, Stephen. What do you recommend for people who are trying to get into ghost hunting? They might not have the right equipment. They might not have the right know-with-all. What are some of the things they need to do?
Well, you know, there's all these programs on television, and I don't really agree with a lot of the methods that they use. I came from both camps. So early on, when I got started back in 2002, I was equipment heavy. I would carry a duffel bag of equipment into places, and we would spend hours and hours there. But over the years, I've developed techniques, and also I'm clairsentient, which means I can feel the energy of spirit.
That's right.
So I really don't rely on equipment much these days. I carry two pieces with me. One is an audio recorder, which is a linear PCM recorder. It's very high definition. So I always document every investigation that we do. And then I carry a simple EMF meter just to check and see if there's any kind of excessive EMF fields in the site. Other than that, that's all I use, and I just rely on my own intuitive abilities and the clairvoyant and clairaudient abilities of the two ladies that I work with.
Do you ever get any readings with the EMF device?
You know, occasionally spirits, when they get very agitated or they get excited, sometimes they will interact with equipment. But what I've discovered over the past 13 years that I've worked with mediums is that if there are gifted mediums on site, they will not bother with equipment usually. They will choose to communicate to those people.
The latter part of the name of your group is called the Spirit Rescue Team. What exactly is that?
Okay, so our focus is not on evidence collection. We don't really go in and try to, record EVPs or take photos or videos or that type of thing. So what we want to do is we want to go into a site. We want to discover if there are any spirit energies at the site, find out why they're there, where they've come from, why they're creating this disturbances that they create. Usually that's a cry for help. And then we are able to communicate and also help do a lot of counseling with them and explain to them that they have options and they don't have to stay there if they don't want to.
Interesting take of all of this. And you have a motto, don't you, called Investigate, Educate, Rescue.
True. Yes.
How does that all put together?
Yeah, we want to go in and we want to investigate intuitively and objectively. So we don't, since we have these clair abilities, we really don't need spirit boxes or K2 meters or any kind of gadgets like that to gather information and evidence, because we're able to accurately sense the energy of those spirits and to communicate. And then once we establish that there is an actual spirit activity taking place there, we educate not only the spirits about their free will options to release and transition if they want to immediately, or sometimes they will take that information and they'll ponder it for a while and then they'll release later. But we also educate the homeowners and the business owners as to what is happening and why those spirits are there and why they're creating the disturbances and what we can do to resolve that situation peacefully. And then, of course, the final piece of the puzzle is the rescue. So we rescue those earthbound spirits, and we connect them vibrationally with healing energies on the other side and their loved ones on the other side. So we actually are kind of like bridges, vibrational bridges or energetic bridges that facilitate communication between the earth plane and those higher realms.
Stephen, I've been to Union, Missouri, but I have not been to the Screaming House there. Tell me a little bit about this place.
That was one of the first interesting investigations that we did out of state, and we had an invitation to go into that house. There was a gentleman named Stephen LaChance. He's actually written a couple of books about that house. And we went there after Stephen had moved out, and another lady was living in the house. But there were a lot of claims about, so-called demonic activity there, and there was a malevolent male energy that we encountered back in one area of the house. So that was, I think we were the first or second paranormal investigation team to go into that house and do an investigation. That was back when I was a member of the Ghost Stalkers of West Tennessee.
Of all the places you've been to, which one really stands out as one of the most haunted or at least loaded with the spirits?
We have a house in Memphis that's called the Woodruff Fontaine House, and it is extremely active. I've been in there with two different mediums, and we've made connections with a lady who's the matriarch of that family, and also a gentleman who's up in the second story of that facility. And there's also children spirits in there. There's actually a...
it's packed, isn't it? It's packed with spirits.
It is. It really is, yeah.
When a house is haunted, does haunted necessarily mean evil?
No.
I don't think so either.
In my experience, when spirits pass, many times they're confused or they don't understand what's happening. Maybe there's a traumatic ending. And usually the disturbances that they create, they're just trying to get someone's attention to say, hey, I'm here, I need some help. And no, it's rare that we run into anything that's really malevolent or, you know, beyond that. So it's usually just regular people that are just trying to get to the next step.
Well, Stephen Williams from the Memphis Ghost Investigations and Spirit Rescue Team, have you ever come across Elvis Presley out that way?
Actually, I have.
Oh, boy. Tell us what happened.
Okay, so I have a friend from Jacksonville, Florida. She's actually the medium who introduced me to Spirit Rescue back in 2007.
Okay.
And she's probably the world's biggest Elvis fan. So she came to Memphis one time, and I, of course, had to take her to Graceland. And the way you visit Graceland is you go across the street, you catch a little bus, and they take you up to the house. So we all went up there, and then we went into the steps and up the front steps, and there's a room to the right as soon as you enter the house. At least it was those years ago when we went in there. And there's a big white piano in this room. And so I was kind of standing in that doorway looking at this piano, and my friend Linda was beside me, and there was another medium beside her. And Linda just kind of collapsed onto me. And I turned and I said, what's wrong? What's happened? And she said, well, he came up behind me and kissed me on the neck. So he gave her a little friendly greeting.
That's Elvis. Is Graceland particularly a big house? I mean, is it truly a mansion?
No, it's not really that large. I think at the time, back in the 50s, it was probably considered, you know, a small mansion or whatever.
Yeah. But
I've been in much bigger antebellum homes than that. But, you know, it's nice. It's nice. It's got some strange decorations in some of the rooms, particularly that jungle room is preserved exactly as it was back in the day.
I heard rumors he used to sometimes take a revolver and shoot his pictures and walls and stuff like that. Any remnants of that?
Not that I saw.
They patched that up.
You can't go into all areas of the house anyway. The upstairs is definitely off limits.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, since you've been doing these ghost investigations, what have you concluded about what's on the other side? What are these entities anyway? Are they people who have died, or people or entities that have never become human? What are they?
Yeah, the spirits that we encounter are just the energetic essence, memories, experiences of people who live. So they have all those memories intact, and when they interact with us, many times their last memory is what was their last moment here on Earth. In particular, there's one I remember that we went into a house where there was a young girl that was hiding in a closet, and her only thought and her only thing that she would say to us was, the house is on fire.
Oh, geez.
So that was the last thing that she remembered, and she was kind of in a mental loop.
Sad.
And reliving that moment over and over. So we're all energy channels, and we can project higher vibrational energy to these spirits, and it helps them kind of break out of that loop. So once we did that, she calmed down, and we were able to have a dialogue with her and explain to her, you know, where she was, and then we called on her loved ones to come, and she was able to release and transition and go with them.
They move on, don't they?
They do. Mm-hmm.
What is the ratio of people who call you to investigate a place as opposed to you and your group finding this place on your own?
It's 100% that we were contacted by people who are asking for our help.
Okay.
Early on, I would go to, you know, some of the well-known places up into the Myrtles, which is allegedly the most haunted house in America, but I dispute that. and I've been in a lot of the places that, you know, the teams on TV have gone into, but normally we're not involved in that kind of work anymore. We just work in residential homes, you know, in our area, or businesses.
But what do you think of some of these paranormal TV shows, Stephen?
I haven't watched them in a long time, because when they started provoking spirits, that was really a turnoff for me, and I think it's just a terrible I mean, it's something you wouldn't do in real life. If you went into a bar or to someone's home, you wouldn't act like that because, you know, you're dealing with people. They don't have bodies. They're an energetic form. So it's just rude and it's just disrespectful. So I don't know actually what the shows are about these days. I haven't watched them in a long time, but I don't agree with that at all.
And I guess they do it for television. I guess, you know, you can't do a 30-minute program and not have something happen. So they're desperately trying to get something going on here, aren't they?
Right. Yeah, they're trying to provoke some kind of reaction. And our approach is completely opposite of that. So we have a gentle, compassionate approach. Our whole focus is to go in and to connect with whoever's there and let them tell their story, do some counseling, which involves a lot of psychology. We try to find out their desires and their needs. And that gives us a clue as to how to help them and how to point them in the right direction and change their focus.
The story of the little girl is pretty heartwarming, I think.
Yeah.
Do you have some others like that? And then we'll get into some scary ones you've gone through.
Okay. One of my favorite places I ever investigated in house was, I call it the Henry House. And we were contacted by a family. This is years ago before I was working with my current team, but I was contacted by a family, and they said that their little girl, whose name was Gracie, would come home from school every day, and there was a little boy named Henry who was waiting for her at the back door and always wanted to play with her. And she described Henry as wearing capris. Well, I didn't know what capris were, so I had to look it up. But basically, she was describing what were known as knickerbockers.
That's right.
Trousers.
Almost like the golfers in those days used to wear those things.
Right, or like the Little Rascals used to wear, you know, in those Our Gang films.
They come up to your ankles or something like that.
Right, you mid-calf. And so this little spirit child was quite amazing. I would go in there with, that was back in the days when I used equipment and my clairsentient abilities weren't really developed. So I would take an EMF meter in there, and I would talk to him, and he would respond with a meter. He'd make it light up. I would take children's music from that time period, and he would get really excited and just make the equipment go nuts. And so I brought a medium friend of mine in there, and we made contact with him, and she got some information. He told her that he came with a letter. So the only thing we could figure out was maybe he had come with a mailman, written along with the mailman or something. But anyway.
Or was the mailman. Or he was the mailman.
Yeah. Right. But there was also a little girl in there who was his sister. So I tried many, many times to help both of them cross over. And what happened was he was doing so many things in there. It was scaring the family. And also they were drawing so much energy to do the things that they were doing that the electrical bill got up like over $1,000 a month. So basically the family, it was a rental house. They just said, we're leaving. You know, we can't do this anymore. So they gave me permission to spend the night there. And I spent the night there in a raging thunderstorm by myself.
Whoa.
And during that night, the power went out. And so I was going through the house with a flashlight.
Pitch black. Jeez.
Yeah. And it all of a sudden it felt like someone had dumped a tub full of ice cold water over me. And I heard a sound and I turned and looked and there was a little girl. She giggled and ran past the doorway. So that was the little sister. So I actually saw her. She actually materialized and presented herself to me. And later that night, when I went to sleep, or right before I went to sleep, I started singing to her.
And you mean you could fall asleep? Hold on, Stephen. We'll let you finish that story when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Stephen Williams from the very special Memphis group that's called the Memphis Ghost Investigations and Spirit Rescue Team. We will take calls with Stephen next hour. Stephen, you were telling us about this one house. And this little spirit girl popped up. Go ahead.
Right. So I was determined I was going to try to help her cross over that night. So I started singing a nursery song that I used to sing to my own daughter when she was about the age of this girl.
I dare you to sing it for us right now.
What's that?
I dare you to sing it for us right now.
Oh,
come
I can't
on.
Remember which one it was.
Okay.
But anyway, after I did that for just a minute or two, I could feel her come close, and then she actually climbed on my lap. I felt like I was electrified from head to toe. And I could also feel, I can feel the energy of spirit, so I could feel that there was a high vibrational spirit that was standing really close nearby. And in my experience, whenever there's a child spirit, this used to bother me when I would encounter child spirits, there's always a loved one, like a relative, crossed over person who's there nearby kind of watching over that child until they cross. So I knew this person was there, and I just kept singing this little girl and talking to her and saying, you know, I felt like a grandmother energy. So I said, your grandmother's here. You know, she's wanting to take you home, and she wants you to go home with her. And she did. Her vibration increased, and she was able to release and transition. So I was able to help her, but I never could convince that little Henry to leave. And so that night was the last night I was ever able to go into that house. About a month later, I met a medium, and I decided to take her out there to see if she could see anyone out there. And I was shocked when I got back to the location because they had demolished the house. And there was just this big pile of rubble there. It was about 12 or 15 feet high. But what was really unusual was on the top of the pile of rubble was a chair. And I hadn't told her anything about my experiences there. So I asked her, do you see anyone here? And she said, yes, there's a little boy sitting in that chair.
Wow.
On top of the pile of rubble. So he was still there.
And probably still is.
Yeah, I believe he is. Actually, I went by there about a year later, and I could feel his energy. So he's really, he's tied to that spot for some reason. I don't know exactly why. He never would communicate very much. He was kind of cryptic.
What about one of your scariest places?
Oh, I would say the weirdest, scariest experience I've ever had in doing this for 18 years. I was working with a different medium named Stephanie, and we had gone over to actually spend the night in the Thomas House, which has been featured on a couple of the TV shows. And we had an investigation in that area. A young family had contacted me and said that their children were being terrorized by spirits. So we spent the night in the Thomas House, and we decided to go on over to that house the next evening. And we were driving down this old winding country road, and off to the right, there was this beautiful white horse. And it was bathed in this, you know, you've seen sometimes when the sunlight breaks through the clouds, there's like a beam of sunlight.
Like a little effect, yeah.
Right, it was right on this horse. So I said, I got to stop and take a picture of this.
Like the movie The Natural, remember? With Robert Redford,
right.
The girl sitting in the stands with that beam on her hat.
It looked exactly like that. This was just a beautiful horse. And as I got out and went over to it and took a picture, I could feel this really high vibrational energy. And we work with Archangel energies, and it felt to me like it was the energy of Archangel Michael. So I took that as a sign, and I got back into the car, and we started driving again, and around this curve in front of us came this very scary-looking person in a wheelchair. It looked like an old haggy lady, woman.
In a wheelchair, by herself?
In a wheelchair, by herself, barreling, I mean, very fast, coming down the center of the road, and she wouldn't move. And so I had to get off onto the right side of the shoulder of the road to go around her.
Was it an electric chair, or was she doing her hand thing on the wheels?
She was doing it with her hands.
Jeez.
And she glared at me as she went by. And I turned to my friend Stephanie. I said, did you see that? And she was stunned. And we turned around and looked, and it had vanished. So it was some type of apparition.
Wow. Did she cackle at you?
Yeah. No, she didn't, but it was scary
that's
enough.
That's
to
all
see
you
that,
need.
So I believe me. So we went on down. About 5 minutes from there was the house that we were going to, and I drove up into the driveway, and it just did not feel right to me. And so I told Stephanie, stay in the car, if you will, please, until I go and check this out. So I went up to the house, knocked on the door, And the door opened, and this very grotesque-looking man in a diaper.
Yeah. How old was he?
And he was looked like he was about 45 or 50 years old.
Jeez.
Now, I know it was at the right address because I had checked on the GPS, and it was the correct address.
This is one of those Chainsaw Massacre movies.
It was very weird. And so he did not say anything, and he turned around and shut the door. And so I went back and I said, "We're leaving. This doesn't feel right." And I contacted that family over and over by email and phone, and they never did answer. So I don't know what that was all about. If that was some type of spiritual attack that was aimed at us, or we were trying to be lured into something, but that has to be the most bizarre experience I've ever had doing this in 18 years.
Stephen, what do you do to protect yourself?
I feel like we are divinely protected because of the type of work we're doing. I feel like that's provided for us without even asking for it. Now, in the beginning, when I was initially investigating 18 years ago, I would, I'd say the St. Michael's prayer and things like that, and wear medals and crosses and things. But I feel, that's not necessary at this point. I feel like whenever we go into a house and we're trying to work with earthbound spirits and try to help them transition, that's just automatically provided for us.
Do you have any heroes in this field that you have looked up to over the years?
I'm glad you asked that question, because it was very strange. About a month ago, I was guided to a YouTube video, and it was an episode of In Search Of, that was hosted by Leonard Nimoy.
That's right,
in the 70s. It was in the first season, and I had never seen this before, but Hans Holzer was actually working with mediums 42 years ago, and there was an episode where he had gone into an investigation in a house in Maine, and he was working with a medium named Ingrid Beckman, and they actually performed a spirit rescue during that episode, which just blew my mind that somebody actually was presenting that on television that long ago. So in my opinion, it's a shame that that did not continue, instead of the way that TV programs are now, where it's mostly about evidence collection and trying to prove or disprove a haunting rather than trying to actually help the earthbound spirits who are there.
And it's always got to end with something scary or something, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, your group is called Memphis. Does that mean you just stay in Memphis?
Well, we're all from this area. Yeah, I was born and raised in Memphis. Kayla Bales, who is one of my partners, her family's from Louisiana, but she grew up in a house in Memphis that had two spirits in it. One was an older gentleman named Carter, and he would move things around and slam doors to let people know he was there. And then she had a little girl who stayed in her closet named Lillian, and she was kind of like her companion, and she stayed with her till she was like an early teen, and then she left. My other partner, Jennifer Brooks, is from Oklahoma, and she lives actually in northern Mississippi, but when she was about 7 years old, her dad passed away, and she, for about a month after he passed away, he would come to her at night and sit on her bed and tell her stories that she had never heard before. And when she told those stories to her mother the next morning, she would say, "Well, we never told you that. How do you know that?" So both of them have been able to see spirits since they were children.
How many places do you think you investigate in any given year?
Oh, it's hard to say. I mean, I've been in hundreds and hundreds of homes and businesses and public sites. I wish I had really kept an accurate record. I'd really like to know, but this month is actually my 18th year anniversary of being involved in this. So it started in St. Augustine, Florida, with a ghost tour, and then in 2007 is where I encountered a spirit child named Alice. And met Linda, who's a medium. She's the one who introduced me to Spirit Rescue. So St. Augustine really is an important place for me in my career.
We are going on our 18th year of doing this show.
Yeah, I used to listen. In fact, when I went to the Union Screaming House investigation back in November 2004, I remember listening to Coast AM on the way home, because that was a drive. We left there about midnight and drove all night long to get back home, and I've listened to you many, many times, George and Art Bell, you know, somewhere
Sure.
Driving back from late night investigations.
We've had some interesting guests over the years, Stephen, who really enjoy doing what they're doing. What motivates you?
It's a real passion for me. I've seen the results in people's lives when their lives return to normal. That really bothers me when these, I call them gadget ghost groups, go into people's homes and they're basically in there for chills and thrills and to maybe find some kind of evidence or record a video and put it on their Facebook page or something like that. And they leave those people with the same predicament that they were facing before they ever came in. So, you know, it's our goal always to go in and effect a positive change to try to help those spirits release, because unless you do that, you know, the activity is just going to keep going on, and people's lives are turned upside down by that.
Do you always go in with a three-person team, or do you go in by yourself? How do you work that?
Actually, my two partners are able to work remotely, so if they're not able to physically go with me, I just have them text me while I'm there on site, and they provide information that way because they're able to read.
Really?
Through me.
You sometimes FaceTime them and, you know, hold your cell phone up while you're walking around?
Normally they just text, and I'm able to pick up information myself through my clairsentient abilities, and also have a little bit of clairvoyance and clairaudience, not as strong as theirs. But the other thing that's really interesting is that whenever someone contacts us and I get their address, I will, you know, these Google cars have been all over the country.
That's
and they
right.
have street views available online.
Yep, yep.
So I will go, I'll plug in the address and I will do a screenshot of the location and send it to them. And they're able to read off the, just off of that.
Can they tell from just a picture what's really going on inside?
Many times they can, yeah. And I can also, if I talk to someone on the phone, that's kind of the way we screen people, is when I call the client for the first time, I can actually tell if there's someone, spirit there, and tell if they're male or female and that type of thing.
Or take us through the moment somebody calls you and says, Mr. Williams, I got a problem in this house. I think it's haunted. What do we do? What do you do from that moment on?
When we go in and do a rescue?
Yes.
Yeah, so again, they will usually email us or leave a voicemail. So I will call them back, and I can, like I said, I can many times tell if there's a spirit energy in the house and if it's even worth pursuing that. But once we arrive on site, if we're all three there, what they will do is they will get out their notepads and they start connecting with any spirits who are there, any energies that are there. I usually spend about 10 minutes just kind of chit-chatting with the homeowner or the business owner, and while they're connecting, and I'm also paying attention and seeing if I pick up on anything. And then we'll go from room to room. Sometimes we encounter spirits in certain areas of the house. They're usually drawn to certain areas. And if we encounter spirit and they're open to communicating with us, we'll go ahead and do counseling at that point and help them transition. But sometimes we have to go back later after we've done our complete walkthrough and work with specific spirits.
But there have been some places that you've just turned down, right? You just didn't get involved?
Normally, when someone contacts us, there's something, usually something happening there that's worth a trip or I've actually been able to do a few things remotely. I had somebody call me from California recently, and I was able to tell that there were a couple of spirits in the house. Later that night, a female spirit actually showed up in my house, and I was able to get a good visual on her and did some counseling with her and actually helped her to transition. And when I called that guy in California the next day, I described who I had seen. He said, that's exactly who we've seen in our house. So sometimes they'll come to us, and there's kind of an energetic connection between the client and us.
How do people stay in a house, Stephen, when they know it's been visited or is being visited by some kind of entity?
Many people can't. They just can't tolerate it, so they'll move. But some people get used to it. Some people enjoy it, actually. They enjoy being able to tell people, I've got a spirit in my house, you know, that type
really?
Of thing.
Well, not every spirit is benevolent, though.
No. But my experience, that's very rare. Usually what people interpret as malevolent or threatening is usually just the spirit trying harder and harder to get someone's attention because they really need help and they don't know how to get out of there. You know, they kind of missed the bus, so to speak.
Has a spirit ever thanked you after the fact?
Yes, they often do that. And the first time that happened, it really shocked me because I thought probably when someone made that transition and crossed over, there was maybe a healing period or an orientation period. But we were working with a mother and son's spirits, earthbound spirits. And the son was, he had some kind of mental handicap or something.
Okay.
And she was determined she was not going to leave until he went with her, and we did some counseling with her and told her that she could actually help him better. She went ahead and released and transitioned, and she came back immediately, and she was in a higher vibration, and she thanked us, you know, profusely for helping her to get to that vibration, and then she actually took him right with her. So, yeah, sometimes they'll come back, and they'll also sometimes leave gifts for people like pennies and feathers and things like that.
All right, we're going to come back in a moment, Stephen, and take phone calls with you. Stephen's websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com.